You are now tuned in to the Eagle Sports Zone.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another great edition of the Eagle Sports Zone. As usual, I am your host, Hende. I will be with you until 8 p.m. this evening on this cool Sunday evening here in the capital, coming to you live from our studio in Windhoek. Welcome to another great edition of the Eagle Sports Zone. And today on the Eagle Sports Zone, we will be discussing, we will be analyzing, we will be dissecting, that is, the Commonwealth Games coming up shortly in Glasgow, Scotland. We will hear from Namibia's chef de mission. We'll hear from the team physio. And we'll discuss all things regarding the Commonwealth Games. I know not everyone is too familiar with the Commonwealth Games. It's kind of the Commonwealth Games are kind of something that if you follow sports, you casually know about, but it's usually something only that, you know, diehard sports supporters know about. So today I will be bringing you all kind of fun facts, all kind of fun information about the Commonwealth Games. And I'll give you a historical breakdown of the Commonwealth Games. Why do the Commonwealth Games exist? Who participates in the Commonwealth? I mean, it is in the name. It is the nations of the Commonwealth. But yes, we will get into that in just a few moments. We will cover some local sporting news, and of course, we will cover some World Cup action. Some great World Cup action has been happening over the last, well, since the World Cup began, really. There hasn't been a dull moment in the World Cup. But as usual, make sure you're following us on all of our social media pages. That's Eagle FM Namibia on Facebook, X, Instagram, LinkedIn, WhatsApp. If you'd like to follow our WhatsApp channel, simply send us a message, a WhatsApp message at 081-200-4144. That's 081-200-4144. And if you'd like to call into the studio with any questions, comments, concerns, opinions, anything sport related, you can dial us in the studio at 083-288-401. That's 083-288-401. And you can join me live in the studio. So, and don't forget, if you missed anything, any program on Eagle FM, you know, maybe you were too busy, you had a wedding, you had something going on, you couldn't tune into your favorite program, you couldn't listen to the Eagle Sports Zone last week, then fear not. All you have to do is go to the Eagle FM website. That's www.eaglefm.com.na, or alternatively, download the Eagle FM mobile application that is free to download on the Google Play Store as well as the Apple App Store. Simply type in Eagle FM Namibia. And if you'd like to catch up on your favorite programs, simply go to the podcast section and type in the name of your favorite program. And speaking of the Eagle FM mobile application, welcome to all our listeners listening to us from all over the world, because you know, if you have the Eagle FM mobile application, you can tune in to your favorite talk radio station wherever you are in the world, whether you're in South Africa, whether you're in Angola, whether you're in China, whether you're in Brazil, whether you're in the USA, whether you're in Germany, you're in the United Kingdom. You find yourself in Antarctica, you can listen to Eagle FM wherever you are on the go, directly from your mobile device or your favorite handheld tablet. Now, let's get into some 2026 FIFA World Cup talk, where, you know, if you've been living under a rock, the round of 32 has now concluded, actually, and it's the round of 16 will begin. Or had the round of 16 began yesterday, but the round of 32 has come to a close as well. As you know, this edition of the World Cup is an expanded 48 team edition, which I have to admit has been a great decision by FIFA to expand the World Cup to 48 teams. We're getting to see so many beautiful stories unfold right in front of our eyes, history being made in real time. You know, some of these things will only settle in after the World Cup, years after the World Cup, when everything is said and done. But let's begin with some round of 32 results, going back all the way to this time last week when South Africa took on Canada. Unfortunately, Bafana Bafana could not advance to the round of 16, although they did make history by qualifying for the round of 32. It was the first time. It was their fourth World Cup, and it is their first time participating in the knockout stages. So just appearing in the knockout stages was a historical moment for Bafana Bafana. But unfortunately, they lost 1-0 to Canada. Brazil took on Japan. Brazil winning that one at 2-1. Japan also, fun fact, in case you didn't know, they have also never won a knockout fixture in the World Cup. And, you know, in all my years of following football, I think this is the first World Cup where I'm fully paying attention to how many teams have actually never won a knockout fixture. Never mind qualify for a World Cup knockout round, but winning a World Cup knockout round. It's a much bigger achievement than I previously thought. So, you know, for any nation that just wins a knockout fixture, congratulations to them. It's not an easy fixture. I mean, we had Paraguay sensationally beating Germany on penalties after a 1-1 draw in 90 minutes. We know what happened to Paraguay last night, but we will get into that in just a moment. And then Morocco, aka the suppliers, beating the Netherlands on penalties as well after a 1-1 draw in regular time. Cote d'Ivoire, you know, as you know, it was 9 out of 10 African teams qualified for the knockout round, but only 2 of them ended up advancing, and one of them being Morocco, qualifying up for the round of 16. In just a few moments, I'll tell you what they did in the round of 16 to create more history. As we know, Morocco has been carrying the African flag extremely well at beginning with the Qatar World Cup. They continue to make more history after beating the Netherlands on penalties, as I said. Cote d'Ivoire losing 2-1 to Norway. France took on Sweden in the round of 32, making light work of the Swedish by beating them 3-0. Mexico, co-host of the 2026 FIFA World Cup, beat Ecuador 2-0. DR Congo put on a great fight, but unfortunately succumbing to a 2-1 defeat to England. Then we had Belgium, in more heartbreak for the continent, beating Senegal 3-2. Senegal, who were leading 2-0 up until I believe it was the 85th minute, and then crumbling. In a few moments, I'll tell you why they crumbled and why it was actually why this tournament has been a disappointing one for Senegal. We'll get into that in just a few moments. USA, hosts, of course, main host of the competition. They beat Bosnia and Herzegovina 2-0. España, that is Spain, they beat Austria 3-0. Portugal in a controversial fixture against Croatia. Now, if you have thoughts on what happened in that fixture, we saw... okay, first of all, Portugal won the fixture 2-1, but they were seconds away from not doing so. You know, FIFA saying that Croatia's equalizer in extra time was, it, I believe it was the 105th minute, actually. Excuse me. 105th minute of extra time. Croatia had equalized, but then VAR said, no, you are offside. And what... Another new addition to this World Cup, they debuted some, in quotes, I'm going to say, state-of-the-art technology. That is they put a sensor in the ball, right? And this is, if those of you that follow cricket, you're very familiar with this technology. It's actually called we'll get the exact name of the technology, but this is something that's used in cricket, has been used in cricket for quite some time now, where the sensor in the ball picks up any touch, any external touch to the ball. So if a player kicks the ball, if a player heads the ball, it will reflect on a graph that if you're watching the match, you would have seen FIFA using this image to justify a particular offside call in the Portugal and Croatia match. Now, the reason I'm saying quote-unquote state-of-the-art technology, because I 100% believe that this technology is accurate, I mean, why else would FIFA spend millions and millions of dollars on implementing this technology? But the way it was being explained to the viewers, us at home, did not match the investment that was put into this technology, right? And I'm not saying this because, you know, I was rooting for or against Portugal. But when you implement things like this, you know, for example, when goal line technology came through, when VAR initially came through, there was an effort made to make the viewers at home feel comfortable that what they're being shown in regards to this technology is accurate. You know, when goal line technology happens, they create this beautiful animation to show you that even if the ball is 0.0001 millimeters over the line, they will show this via the animation, right? It's black and white. There's no subjectivity. It's not a matter of opinion. It's either a goal or not. And over the years, we've been able to trust this technology because of this, right? There's no more questions of did the ball cross the line or not. We simply go to the technology. Same with offside now. We're seeing, you know, you can be offside by 0.0001 millimeters. FIFA will show you the images required for you to believe that you are either on or offside, right? But this technology in the ball, the way FIFA explained that in that Croatia fixture, I have to say, I am not convinced. One, by that explanation. Two, by the graph that they showed us of this technology, of when the Croatia players supposedly touched the ball. And when you look at the video, and then go back to what FIFA said, you know, FIFA has, they tried through their various social media platforms. They have a page called, I believe it's called FIFA Media or something. They tried to explain the decision-making process and why the decision was given the way it was given. And they said that the Croatia player's hair touched the ball, and that's what the sensor picked up, which I'm not going to argue against. I do believe that the technology is of such a caliber that it could pick up such a touch. But my question is, why didn't they just show the full sequence, accompany that with the graph to see, so that us at home could see the different spike levels of the graph? Why did they only show the one touch? That's my only really discrepancy when it came to this, right? But I guess it wouldn't be a World Cup if there wasn't a bit of controversy. You know, football, at the end of the day, is entertainment. And that fixture, Portugal versus Croatia, was very entertaining. But it's a shame that it had to end in that manner. Croatia, as we know, their previous two World Cups, they managed to medal at their last two World Cups. And for a small nation like Croatia, incredible, incredible achievement. You know, it's the end of an era for the likes of Modric, the likes of Perisic. So let's see if Croatia will be able to carry on that momentum and be a mainstay when it comes to being a European or a world footballing powerhouse, right? Same with Morocco as we're seeing. Let's see if they can maintain this. But anyways, the rest of the round of 32 fixtures involved Switzerland and Algeria. Our African brothers from the north were knocked out by Switzerland. Switzerland winning that 2-0. Egypt, the Pharaohs, they beat Australia on penalties in the round of 32. So Mohamed Salah in his, one can only assume, in his last dance for Egypt, advancing to the round of 16. Then Ghana, our West African brothers, they succumbed to a 1-0 defeat to Colombia. Quite a disappointing performance from Ghana, I must say. And then last but not least, Cape Verde. You know, next week we're gonna have people from Cape Verde on the show. We're gonna do our best to to reach out to Cape Verdean journalists, Cape Verdean fans, to see who we can find. I mean, Cape Verde, I think, have taken the hearts of really anyone watching the World Cup. First time competing in the World Cup. And if you look at it, really, Cape Verde has had not a single easy fixture, really, at this World Cup. Maybe you can say the fixture against Saudi Arabia that you can say was sort of favorable. But, I mean, you have to... You have to put into context what Cape Verde achieved in this tournament, right? One of the third smallest nation to ever compete at a World Cup. First time at a World Cup. And their first defeat only came in their fourth match in the competition. Only came once they qualified for the knockout stage. Their only defeat in the competition came to the defending champions of the World Cup. And that's, of course, Argentina. And it took Argentina 120 minutes to defeat the Cape Verdeans. So, you know, for the Cape Verdeans, we have to... give them a round of applause. I mean, they couldn't have dreamt of a better World Cup campaign, really. And that fixture against Argentina, the way Cape Verde played, sensational. Cape Verde opened their World Cup campaign, against Spain, one of the teams that many people see as favorites for the competition. They held them to a draw. Played against Uruguay. You know, traditionally, one of the powerhouses of world football, held them to a draw. Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, okay, not on the level of Uruguay and Spain and Argentina, but still they've had some World Cup experience, as we saw in Qatar. So nonetheless, Cape Verde put in a sensational performance. And I can only hope that they will sustain this level of performance and that, you know, that they continue to use the funds that they get from this World Cup in the right manner. We continue to see great talents coming from Cape Verde, whether it's through the diaspora, whether it's through, you know, the binationals choosing to play for Cape Verde. You know, that's also been a big topic of conversation at this World Cup, is there's a lot of binational people in this World Cup playing for various countries. I mean, we're seeing names play for countries that ordinarily wouldn't fit said countries. I mean, I'm thinking of Australia. We saw originally Sudanese people playing for Australia. You know, we're seeing Somalis play for Sweden. Things of that nature we're seeing at this World Cup. So hopefully Cape Verde will be able to keep taking advantage of that, keep attracting players. I mean, we all know the story of their goalkeeper, their 40-year-old goalkeeper who has become a world sensation. I believe he now has 20 million followers on Instagram. So, you know, next World Cup, 2030. Hopefully we'll be a young talent in there. And I need to remind you that Cape Verde qualified for the World Cup by topping their group. And this is a group that included Angola and Cameroon. And they only lost one match. Cape Verde only lost one match in their World Cup qualifiers. 1 out of 10 games, only drew 2 and 1-7. So they comfortably qualified for the World Cup. It's fantastic to see. Coming into the World Cup, they had won 3 games in a row from their friendlies. They beat Finland. They beat Serbia 3-0 in the Finland fixture. Okay, they won that on penalties. And then in their last friendly before the World Cup began, they played against Bermuda, beating them at 3-0. So, you know, I could spend the whole show talking about Cape Verde. You know, this is what football is about. And this is why FIFA expanded the competition. It's for moments like this to give opportunity to the likes of Cape Verde. I mean, probably ordinarily, okay, they ended up topping their group, but under normal circumstances, Cape Verde wouldn't have qualified for wouldn't be in a World Cup, rather, let me say like that. So they are definitely an example of why this expansion was made. And now I'm already seeing talks about expanding the World Cup even further. I don't know if that now is a good idea. I think we found a sweet spot at 64. Maybe the only thing that they can tweak is the third place thing. That's a bit shaky, but you know, it's growing pains. I'm sure FIFA will manage to perfect it. But the round of 16 started yesterday with Morocco beating a co-host Canada. That is 3-0, advancing to the quarterfinals. Their second. Morocco has now qualified for back-to-back quarterfinals. Historical achievement. So they are one match away from making it back-to-back semifinals. Who's to say that they can't qualify for the semifinals as well? And then yesterday we had as well France against Paraguay. Paraguay, you know, coming, you know, Paraguay decided that they're going to play a different sport. They're going to play a brand of football that not many people enjoy. But on a personal level, I enjoyed what was happening in that fixture. It was different to what we've ordinarily seen in this World Cup. Paraguay came physical. They did their best to agitate, to annoy France. But France didn't crumble. They managed to stay even keel. You know, they, at a certain point, they even started laughing. You know, they knew what Paraguay was trying to do. They didn't succumb to the mind tricks of the Paraguayan players. You know, the comedy ball tactics, let's put it like that. And they ended up advancing. France ended up advancing thanks to a penalty from none other than Mr. Kylian Mbappe himself that was in the second half. So France, who many see as tournament favorites as well, who have been playing exceptionally well, Mbappe in particular, you know, Michael Olise, Dembele, Doué, the whole team really of France has been crazy. And, you know, we can also talk about, we can spend a whole show talking about how France is a quote unquote African side, you know, but we won't do that. We won't do that today. That's a topic for another day. But they, France, also another example of binationals choosing to play for a particular team. I mean, Olise, other than Mbappe, has been their shining player. This is someone that was born and raised in the United Kingdom, but is playing for France. So, no. Another example of the times that we live in today and how sport reflects, as I always say here on the Eagle Sports Zone, how sport is reflecting what is happening in the overall wider society. And then tonight, round of 16 action continues. That is with Brazil playing against Norway. Norway, who also got their first knockout round victory at a World Cup over the Ivory Coast. And after I go through these round of 16 fixtures, I'll briefly get back to that about the whole experience of being in a World Cup. And link it back to what I was talking about earlier about how many teams actually haven't won a knockout fixture in the World Cup. But I'll get back to that in just a few seconds. So later tonight or this morning, we will have Mexico taking on England. That is at the legendary Azteca Stadium. And that should be a good fixture as well. It will be another tough challenge for England, who scraped by against DR Congo. Then we'll have a blockbuster fixture, that is Portugal up against Spain. That'll be tomorrow evening. Then the host, USA, will be taking on Belgium. Argentina, defending champions, will be taking on Egypt. And last but not least, Colombia will be taking on Switzerland. That is on the 7th of July. That'll be on Tuesday evening. And the first quarterfinal is already set. It'll be France against Morocco, aka the suppliers. So that should be another interesting fixture. A lot of the Moroccan team was born and raised in France. So this will be the whole binational storyline is going to continue in the quarterfinals of the World Cup. And it's probably a storyline that will remain true until the final, depending on who it is that we're going to see. In the final. But yes, it feels like the World Cup just started and it's already feeling like it's coming to an end. You know, we were having three, four games per day, and now we're dwindling down to 1-2 games per day. And on the other side of this, we will continue talking more World Cup before we get into some Commonwealth action.
Großartige Neuigkeiten. Imba ist jetzt noch besser geworden. Wir haben ganz neue Funktionen hinzugefügt, um dein Erlebnis noch reibungsloser, schneller und leistungsstärker zu machen als je zuvor. Bereit, das volle Potenzial von Imba freizuschalten? Erhalte alle exklusiven Funktionen für nur 36 Namibia-Dollar pro Monat oder spare noch mehr mit unserem speziellen Abonnementplänen. 5% Rabatt bei einem 3-Monats-Abonnement, 10% Rabatt bei einem 6-Monats-Abonnement oder 25% Rabatt bei einem 12-Monats-Abonnement. Wähle den Plan, der am besten zu dir passt und genieße alles, was Imba zu bieten hat, zu einem unschlagbaren Preis. Imba, where the world congregates. Lade es herunter und abonniere noch heute.
Lipura nengelo wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko dite okoye ekukurile. Oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuala. Onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu honda doi inawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kumberewa, nora hetatu natu, bali o hetatu watatu, o mafilane, Eagle FM, the eye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
You are now tuned in to the Eagle Sports Zone.
Welcome back to the Eagle Sports Zone. If you're just now tuning in, we are talking World Cup at the moment, and we'll get into some Commonwealth action as well. So continuing with our World Cup talk, we have to talk about Africa. We have to talk about Africa's performance at this World Cup. Now, coming into this World Cup, I was very excited by the fact that we had 10 African teams participating in this World Cup. First time ever that we've had 10. You know, I've talked at great length about Africa's history with the World Cup. I did that last week. Africa's achievements at the World Cup. So if you missed that, go to our website, www.eaglefm.com.na, or the mobile application that's free to download on the Google Play Store as well as the Apple App Store. Go to the podcast section. Simply type in Eagle Sports Zone World Cup. It'll come up, right? Now, I also spoke about why this World Cup should be as Africans now, speaking as Africans. So for everyone tuning in from everywhere else in the world, bear with me here. I'm talking to my Africans now. Why this World Cup as Africans should be a turning point. If you weren't already a fan of African football, if you weren't already in love with African football, if you didn't feel a passion for African football, if you didn't feel the need to support African football, I hope this World Cup converted you, right? And I hope this World Cup will now be a turning point. Because me personally, I want a DR Congo shirt, like right now. I want one. If I could find one in any of our Namibian shops, which I spoke about at length, I can't find one. But now, especially after this World Cup, I want a DR Congo shirt. I want a Cape Verde shirt. Ivory Coast to an extent. I want an Ivory Coast shirt. So I hope this is going to convert us not only on a surface level, footballing fan level, but on a deeper level, on a psychological level, right? You know, on a psychological level, for us Africans to feel proud of supporting African teams. You know, next World Cup, I don't want to see so many European flags and European shirts and South American flags and South American shirts on our streets and on our shelves. Should be African ones. But I digress. What was evident at this World Cup, you know, we can talk about Congo. I think we can exclude Congo and perhaps Cape Verde from this, right? Because still new to the World Cup scene and all of that, no one really expected much from them. And they put up a brave fight, honestly. Like, exceeded expectations. DR Congo could have beaten England. Legitimately could have beaten England. But this is what we call it in professional sports, the fine margins of sports. I'm thinking of that chance of Wissa when he hit the post from 6-7 yards out when they already 1-0 up to make it 2-0. Things like that could have completely changed the game, right? But then obviously England, you know, you have Bellingham, you have Rice, you have Anderson, you have Kane. Eventually, these world-class talents are going to prove to you why they're world-class. And that's what Harry Kane did in the second half. He said, okay, funny business is over. It's time to get serious. And he managed to pull through for England. So I can excuse DR Congo in that extent. They put up a brave fight. Should have won, but like I said, fine margins in sport. But Algeria, Senegal, Ghana, Ivory Coast, Senegal especially. Dios mio, Senegal. Who else can we talk about? South Africa to an extent as well. But mainly Ghana, Senegal, Ivory Coast. I'm going to single out those three. And Algeria also, actually. Senegal, Ghana, Ivory Coast, Algeria. They played with a certain inferiority complex, I want to call it. Really, honestly. Especially Senegal. My goodness, Senegal. Leading 2-0. Leading 2-0 up until the 86th minute. And you go on to lose the fixture 3-2. And get eliminated. And this is, mind you, this is meant to be Senegal's, you know, golden generation. And Senegal we'll talk briefly about things that are happening behind the scenes with Senegal and some of the things that continue to hold African football back. It's unfortunate, but we have to talk about it. But I want to talk about on the pitch. Senegal, total embarrassment, honestly. From a country or from a team that the whole continent and greater parts of the world supported during the African Cup of Nations, who in my eyes are still African champions. I don't care what CAF has to say. I cannot acknowledge a trophy won, you know, via email. We saw what happened on the pitch. So, you know, Senegal in this World Cup was supposed to do what Morocco did in the last World Cup. And what makes it even worse about Senegal is, yes, this is their golden generation, but the old guys, I'm talking about Koulibaly, I'm talking about Mane, they didn't really need to be mainstays in this World Cup. And we saw Koulibaly ended up being dropped because of his horrendous performances in the group stage. Mane, okay, I guess you can say Mane is, he's kind of playing the Ronaldo role that Ronaldo is playing for Portugal. You can't drop Ronaldo. He's Ronaldo. In this case, it's Mane. You can't, you know, he's the face of the team. So we can excuse that. But what happened in the second half, once Senegal went up 2-0, doesn't make any sense at all, considering how they were playing in the first half. This, I can only put it down to some sort of inferiority complex. The reason I say inferiority complex also, I'm moving on now to Ivory Coast, the elephants. Their captain, Frank Kessie, you know, who's been a mainstay in European football, I believe now is at AC Milan. Coming out after the match to say, the difference in the fixture was inexperience, etc., etc. Basically saying that Norway had more experience than Ivory Coast on this stage. Why that's a ridiculous statement is, one, it's not true. You know, Norway hasn't been at a World Cup since the 90s. Okay? In the 21st century, Norway has never played in a World Cup. In fact, the last major tournament Norway played before this World Cup. So their last World Cup was 1998, right? That's for Norway. And the last time they played in the Euros was 2000. So there's no one on this Norway team that knows what major tournament football is like. Quite literally no one. The last time Norway played at a World Cup, most of the squad wasn't even born. So I don't know what Kessie is talking about when he says, oh, it came down to experience. They have more experience than us at this stage. No, they don't. And that's what I'm trying to say with this inferiority complex kind of thing. That's something that Kessie has just put in his mind to say that, oh, because they're European, they must have more experience than us. They must be better than us. When in fact, you, Kessie, you guys have more experience than Norway. But looking at the match, I couldn't tell. And that's why you're out now. That's why you're on holiday now, and Norway is continuing in the tournament. That's what I mean with the inferiority complex. South Africa, okay. And before I go to South Africa, it's also Norway's first time. Winning a knockout fixture. The last time Norway was in the knockouts was in 1998. They didn't win that. Before that, they played in the World Cup in 1994. They got knocked out in the group stage. Between 1994 and 1938, Norway didn't even qualify for the World Cup. Prior to that, they qualified for the round of 16. In the 1938 World Cup and lost. So Mr. Kessie, you need to look within. Mr. Kessie and Ivory Coast as a whole, you need to look within. You had a chance to go to the round of 16 of the World Cup, but you didn't take it because you were scared. You were intimidated. All because, I don't know why. Just because they're European or something, I don't know. But the time for African teams to feel like, oh, we're lucky to be participating at the World Cup, that time needs to be over. And Cape Verde showed that we're not here to participate, we're here to compete. Cape Verde showed that. DR Congo showed that. Senegal showed that and then decided to forget everything also. Senegal showed that, let me say, for 60 minutes of football. Maybe let's give them 150 minutes if we include the Iraq match, where they made history by becoming the first African nation to score 5 goals at a World Cup. Okay, we'll give them that. But against Belgium, forget about it, right? So now we're left with Morocco and Egypt. Morocco against France in the quarterfinals. I mean, if Morocco can pull off beating France, we're talking about the best African.
Do you need toiletries and household cleaners? You won't get it cheaper than a You Save up to the 7th of June. Get 250 mm jars of Vaseline for only $25. Smell fresh with Playboy roll-on deodorant for just $18.99. Get 2 kilograms of Surf's hand washing powder for just $49.99. Get 750 mm Sunlight dishwashing liquid for $28.99. And get 2 boxes of Cares Maxi sanitary pads for only $12.99. You Save. Where else?
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have the capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the only person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Lipura nengelo wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoye ekukurile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano hile koshiwala onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu kwa ndado ili nawa nune udo otukwetira o special ngetashia kengeshe faa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa ninge pata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ili ako mderewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye.
You are now tuned in to the Eagle Sports Zone.
Welcome back to the Eagle Sports Zone. So as we round up here our World Cup talk before the commercial break, I was just talking about if Morocco can manage to beat France. I mean, there's a strong argument to be made. Actually, I don't even think it's an argument because they're the only team to do so, to reach a World Cup semifinal. But if they beat France, who, as I talked about earlier, has been sensational in terms of their on-field play. This is the best African football team to ever grace a football field. African national team to grace a football field. Because if they beat that France team, who many pundits are talking about, this might be the best World Cup team ever in terms of how they perform, in terms of the caliber of talent. I mean, when we look at the people that France can bring off the bench, it's actually unfair what they can do. And we're talking about, you know, levels of talent competing with the 2002 Brazilian teams. If you want to go back to the Pele Brazil teams, if you want to go back to Maradona in 86? Was it 86? Yeah. 86. If you want to talk about Spain 2010, this France team is being spoken about in that caliber. Of course, they have to win it to firmly be in there. But if this Morocco team can knock them out, there's no debate. This is the greatest African team ever. So they're, you know, carrying the burden of Africa on their shoulders once more. Them alongside with Egypt, who, you know, if you used to watch Egypt, let's say between 2006 to maybe 2011, those years when they used to win AFCON every single time. Now we're talking about Mohamed Zidane. We're talking about Abou Trika. Those years, great legacy. So maybe this crop can match that as well. The king, Mo Salah, can etch himself, continue to etch himself in the history books of African football. Let's see what they can do. My last point on Africa at the World Cup, I want to talk about Senegal and what was happening behind the scenes, what's being reported that was happening behind the scenes. And these are the unfortunate things that I honestly cannot explain at this point. It's tiring to continue reading about. It's tiring to come on air and talk about these things, but these are the things that happen on the continent. And don't forget the number in the studio is 0832-888-401, 0832-888-401 if you'd like to share something on what we're talking about today. But these are the stories that are coming out about Senegal. So, first one says here in the report that several federation officials spent their stay focused on everything except football, with claims of gala evenings, vintage bottles of alcohol, expensive gifts, lavish spending, and quote-unquote female company. Sometimes, as Africans, we're our own enemy, honestly. This, what I just read, you've heard for probably all the football federations in, not all, let me take that back, not all. You've heard about, from a lot of football federations, we've heard it here at home, unfortunately, we've heard it in South Africa. It's not an uncommon story. But I thought, you know, I thought Senegal was one of the nations, one of the federations that was above this kind of thing. Next, they're saying that the coach, Pape Thiaw, who honestly should resign after what happened against Belgium, that is coaching malpractice. Anyways, they said he signed his contract just 5 hours before the match against Norway and was even considering not taking his place on the bench at first. So what you're telling me is that you went into a World Cup with a coach that was not under contract. Make that make sense for me, those of you that are listening. Then, next, they're saying that some officials allegedly invited friends and content creators to join the delegation whilst players looked on in disbelief at what was happening. I don't even need to comment on that one. Next, they're saying that hotel staff complained about the behavior of several members of the Senegalese delegation. Also, no need to comment on that one. And then lastly, they're saying that some players were left to fend for themselves, ordering fast food, and even left the hotel without supervision. And then, of course, there were also stories about the players not being paid their bonuses and things of that nature. This is now dating back to the AFCON. And then once they were knocked out, Pape Gay said he's not returning to the national team until the coach, Pape Thiaw, resigns from the team. So that's another indication that there's been turmoil. There's been turmoil in the camp, which honestly is disappointing to hear. Then my last bit of conversation in regards to the World Cup in Africa is, you know, last weekend we spoke about the prize money. The African nations, the eight teams that have been knocked out, they have each raked in, let's call it $14 million in prize money. And then, in total, all 10 teams have so far collected $141 million. And then there's still Egypt and Morocco. So they're banking an additional, who right now are at $17.5 million for reaching the round of 16. As you know, the winner of the World Cup gets 51 million US dollars, I believe it is. So the reason I bring that up is, you know, I'm talking about Cape Verde. I'm talking about DR Congo. This is a lot of money that if you deduct what the players are going to get, what the coaching staff are going to get from this as their bonus, as a compensation, is a lot of money that's going to go to the federations. So let's say on the conservative side, the federations probably pocket around 8, 9, maybe 10 million. I don't know how much the federations pay the players individually as a bonus from this. But we can comfortably say that the federations will, at minimum, pocket 6 million US dollars. Which in Namibian dollars is around 95 million Namibian dollars. You know, imagine what the NFA could do with $95 million. How that could boost local football. So, on the other side of this musical break, we'll get into some sports business news. And then we will get into our talk of the Commonwealth Games. We'll talk about the history of the Commonwealth Games, Namibia's history in the Commonwealth Games, who Namibia is taking to the Commonwealth Games, and what we can look forward to at the Commonwealth Games. We will be back on the other side of this, on the other side of these sounds from none other than the man himself, that is Bob Marley.
Every man got the right to decide his own destiny, and in this judgment there is no partiality. So arm in arms with arms, we'll fight this little struggle, 'cause that's the only way.
We gonna fight.
We gonna fight.
We love to fight.
We gonna fight.
Fighting. from the wise and the prudent, been revealed to the babe and the suckling.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
You are now tuned in to the Eagle Sports Zone.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Eagle Sports Zone. The number in the studio is 0832-888-401. That's 0832-888-401. Now, some quick sports business news that I want to run through before we get into the Commonwealth discussion is we start in West Africa, in Nigeria, where the Nigeria sets, okay, Nigeria says billion naira NPFL prize money. Billion naira is around $730,000. And as well as a minimum wage of $1,460 for their players in their local footballing league. And that works out to around $23,000 Namibian. Let's call it even $25,000. Right? Which I don't think anyone in our league earns $25,000. The most I heard, I can't confirm or deny this, is $20,000, but I can't obviously say who that belongs to. But what this article is saying, this is a piece by Business of Sports Africa, a publication that we like to discuss here on the Eagle Sports Zone. They're saying that Nigeria has put a billion naira number on the table, and in doing so framed the central question facing its domestic league, which is, can a league that has struggled for years to sell its broadcast rights, pay modest wages, suddenly underwrite the most expensive reward structure in its history? And I'm only talking about this because it's so similar to what is happening here in our country, right? And the National Sports Commission of Nigeria now, they announced that the Nigeria Premier Football League season will earn a minimum of 1 billion or $730,000 in prize money, which is a fivefold jump from the previous 200 million naira or $146,000 sum. The runner up will take home 500 million naira or $365,000 US dollars. Now, to compare this to the Namibian Premier League prize money, let me just confirm that figure for you. Just make sure I'm giving you the correct. It pales in comparison. Okay, because our prize money sits at 850,000 Namibian dollars or 47,000 US, right? So, you know, even the third place finisher in the Nigerian League makes more than the Namibian Premier League winner. Now, these figures that I'm giving you of the Nigerian League are all subject to final confirmation, but this is what they're proposing. This is what they're putting on the table. And then they're also making a monthly minimum wage fee of 2 million naira or 1,460 US dollars, which works out to around 17,500 US dollars per year. And that's the minimum wage. So I'm sure your star players are going to earn most likely double that at minimum, even maybe even triple. Who knows? Then the one, a quote from the chairman of their sports commission said that professional football must be run professionally. If strict enforcement means fewer clubs qualify initially, then so be it. And I kind of like that, honestly. I like that. I like that he's saying that, because it forces professionalization onto the league. They're not just talking about it, they're actually doing it. And another reason the article says that they're doing this is to attract sponsorship. The chairman said that these reforms are an attempt to manufacture the conditions that make the claim, which is that the league is ripe for multi-billion naira sponsorship, to make this claim true or to make it bankable. And so they reiterate that the revenue problem that nobody has solved yet is that Nigerian Premier Football League clubs operate without the meaningful television revenue, without merchandising, without sponsorship portfolios, or match day income. Now, if you're a loyal listener of the Eagle Sports Zone, I've talked about this at great length on the Eagle Sports Zone when it comes to Namibia. I've written articles about this. I've contacted the ministry. I've contacted our federations. This is basically copy and paste of what I've been talking about, you know? This is, for those that didn't believe me, this is proof that I kind of knew what I was talking about. For a league to generate revenue, these are some of the things that they need to be doing. TV revenue being number one. There's a reason why in that list I read off that TV revenue was mentioned first, because that's the main driver. And they said in the article, it also says that many of these clubs function less like independent businesses and more like public institutions with their finances tied to state government priorities. Does that sound familiar, Namibian listeners? Which makes the proposed minimum wage structure, player wage floor, a serious liability for the bottom half of the table. The wage arrears history is the warning sign. There's a team called Heartland. They protested over 11 months of unpaid salaries in 2022. 11 months. Katsina United players went public over 5 months of arrears. This was last year in 2025. And in terms of broadcasting, SuperSport exited the league in 2017, citing the Naira devaluation. Reasons for that being that the costs that SuperSport was facing in being a broadcaster of this league were dollar denominated, but the ad revenue was in Naira. That's interesting, actually. I never thought about that. And it actually doesn't make sense. Why would the cost be dollar denominated? But anyways, a renewed SuperSport deal was terminated within a year, with the broadcaster pointing to weak marketing and communication infrastructure. Does that also sound familiar, Namibia? You know, like I say, sport is a reflection of what? Of society. This picture that I'm painting here is unfortunately true for many countries on the continent. This is all the way in West Africa, but it's so true here in Southern Africa as well, obviously excluding South Africa. A 5-year billion Naira Star Times agreement also ended prematurely amid an unfavorable operating environment. And then in November 2025, the NPFL signed a 5-year 2.1 billion Naira data and commercialization package with InView Technologies, AS Production Hub, and Roundup Technology built around free-to-air access, with 60% of revenue earmarked for clubs and a 800 million Naira upfront activation fee. That latest deal is the real commercial reasoning behind this new billion Naira promise. The commission also signaled a substantial intervention package to support infrastructure, governance, and compliance. Now the question remains is whether central intervention plus one media rights deal can substantially fund a reward structure of this scale, whether the prize is, for now, an incentive that outruns the league's underlying economics. So, this again, you know, as we are experts here on the continent, sounds good on paper, but let's see if this will actually happen. But, you know, you have to start somewhere. So, let's look at it from a glass half full perspective, right? Then, in our last sports business story, we have Manchester City and Midea are building football pitches across 5 African cities. So Midea is a South African company in partnership with Manchester City and local NGO Disky 9. They unveiled a refurbished community pitch in Soweto earlier this month. And they're looking to build similar pitches in Lagos, Luanda, Nairobi, Johannesburg, and Rabat, which is obviously Nigeria, Angola, Kenya, South Africa, and Morocco. So good to see, you know, global one of the bigger teams in the globe, looking to plow back to the continent. Now let's talk about, or let's get into the Commonwealth Games rather, with I'll give you a brief context of exactly who Namibia is taking to the Commonwealth Games that are taking place in Scotland between the 23rd of July and the 2nd of August. In total, there will be around 74 countries and 3,000 athletes will be competing at the Commonwealth Games. So the people, or Team Namibia, excuse me, will consist of on the athletic side of things, Chanel Kutsia, Elvis Gossip, Charlie Matundu, and Ryan Williams. On the para-athletic side, it will be Ananias Sikongo will be representing us. On the swimming side of things, we have Jessica Humphrey, Luke Bierkes, Jose Canhulo, Oliver Durand, and Ronan Vantanar. Ronan Vantanar. Excuse me if I got your name wrong. And then we have bowlers as well. That is Amanda Steenkamp, Diana Filyun, Ronald Steenkamp, and Waylon Vensel. Then we have boxers going as well. That is Misha Areas, Philip Hoseb, Gepa Dipinge, Petrus Kutsia, and try again, Develo. And then on the gymnastic side of things, we have Sureshni Andrew, Anne-Lene Thurbin, Joni Thurbin, as well as Taisha Humphreys. And Namibia has competed at every Commonwealth Games since 1994, and we've collected a total of 24 medals, 5 gold, 4 silver, and 15 bronze. And of those 15 bronze, 4 of them came at the 2022 Games. Those were won by Hilalia Johannes, our famous marathon runner, Ananias Sikongo, our famous para-athlete, Alexander Miller, our famous mountain biker, who's also an Olympian, Christine Bomer, as we know, famous Olympian, a very famous Olympian. Yeah, those were our medals at the 2022 Games. So now a brief, you know, history of the Commonwealth Games. They are one of the world's largest multi-sporting events. They bring together athletes from member nations of the Commonwealth. Another nickname or another name for the Commonwealth Games is the quote-unquote friendly games. And they began in 1930. I don't know what was happening in 1930 because that's also the year that the World Cup began, now that I think about it. So I don't know what was in the air in 1930 to create these wonderful events of ours, but yes, that was the first one. And the games taking place this year will be the 23rd edition of the Commonwealth Games. And the first edition of the Commonwealth Games took place in Canada. Back then, they were dubbed as the British Empire Games and consisted of 11 countries. Then they didn't have any until 1954 again. And then it was only in 1970 when the name was changed to the British Commonwealth Games. And then in 1978, the name was officially changed to the Commonwealth Games as it is known today. And then in 1986, it was one of the most politically significant games with 32 countries, primarily from Africa, Asia, and the Caribbean, boycotting in protest of apartheid-related issues. Again, another example of the power of sport. And then in 1998, those were the first games that were being held in Asia. That was in Kuala Lumpur. And it was also the introduction of team sports such as rugby, sevens rugby, cricket, hockey, and netball. So some fun facts. As I alluded to, the Commonwealth Games kind of had four different names. So between 1930 and 1950, they were called the British Empire Games. Between 1954 and 1966, they were called the British Empire and Commonwealth Games. Then they were called the British Commonwealth Games between 70 and 74. And then from 78 until now, they're called the Commonwealth Games. They are the second largest multi-sporting event after the Olympics in terms of participating nations, consisting of more than 70 nations and territories participating in the games. And then there's something called the King's Baton Relay, which travels hundreds of thousands of kilometers around the world, visiting every Commonwealth nation before the opening ceremony. And Australia has won the most medals in Commonwealth Games history. And unlike the Olympics, athletes from England, Scotland, Wales, and Northern Ireland compete as separate teams rather than as the United Kingdom or as Great Britain. Which used to be one of my favorite things at the Olympics is watching the football team of Great Britain, because it was, you know, a collection of, or supposed to be a collection of, some of the best players in England, Scotland, Wales, and Northern Ireland. So on a personal level, that was a fun thing to see at the Olympics. And then in 1998, that was the first time that they were hosted outside the Commonwealth's traditional regions of Europe, Oceania, and North America. As I said, those games were hosted in Kuala Lumpur. And probably not to anyone's surprise, South Africa is Africa's most successful Commonwealth nation with 416 medals, which consists of 137 golds, 132 silver, 147 bronze, and that ranks sixth all-time amongst all nations participating at the Commonwealth Games. And this includes exclusion from when South Africa was banned because of apartheid. The second most successful nation at the Commonwealth Games is Nigeria, with their strong suits being weightlifting, wrestling, boxing, and as well as athletics. One of Africa's most iconic Commonwealth moments came in 1974 when Philbert Bayi set a world record in the 1,500 meters at the Christchurch Games, where he defeated John Walker in what many say is one of the greatest races in Commonwealth history. And our best performer in the Commonwealth Games obviously is none other than Frankie Fredericks, who is, I was going to say arguably, but I don't think it's really arguable. He is our greatest athlete. He has multiple gold medals at the Commonwealth Games. Obviously, his famous Olympic silver medals. And he's one of the fastest sprinters in the history of the world, in the history of humanity, is our very own Frankie Fredericks. And the 1998 Games is where Frankie Fredericks actually won gold, the first Games to be held outside of the Commonwealth. And we've won, obviously, more Commonwealth medals than Olympic medals. And most of those come from athletics. So, speaking of Team Namibia, we're going to hear now from the chef de mission of Namibia, of Namibia's Commonwealth delegation, Let's take a listen to what he had to say. He caught up with my colleague Dwight Links. This was on Saturday morning.
Thank you once again, Joseph, for taking the time to talk to us here at Eagle FM, and primarily for us to also get an understanding of the Namibian Commonwealth team's preparations and, you know, the road that has built up to now, and primarily what you guys can expect that side in Glasgow, in Scotland. Thank you once again.
Okay, no, thank you very much for this interview. Basically, the team has been preparing. You know, this announcement didn't come yesterday. But however, I think the most difficult part was on the selection, because now there are qualifiers and all that. So only after we knew who has qualified, then that is when now the training really started, knowingly that we are focusing only on those athletes. But as far as the preparation is concerned, the coaches are doing a great job. And that's why you see today here we don't have all the athletes. Some are in Europe, some are in the country, and then just busy with their program. So we said this is important for every athlete to be here, but we also know that preparation is key to the success. Hence, we then decided that those that requested to be excused, we said it's fine. But you have, I think, I don't know the time you arrived here, you have seen that some have actually logged on online just to be updated. So, but otherwise, our expectation on the other side, we really expect these athletes to perform. You know, some of them, it's the first time competing at this level. But yeah, it's really an issue of us going there as Namibians, as a Namibian team, to go and
care that builds with you. That's the rollover benefit from NHB. When you claim less than a defined amount of your day-to-day benefits in a year, the unused amount is carried over for the next year, like a savings account for your health. You can use your rollover benefit in many ways, from co-payments to medical costs usually not covered, even contribution holidays. Learn more at nhb.com.na. T's and C's apply. NHB, rooted in care for you.
Your health, your life, your peace of mind. NHB, we're about you.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of
issues of participating just to say Namibia was there.
That's obviously the biggest challenge we have to avoid.
But otherwise, we really want them to compete. And my message is that we are not putting pressure on them, because the moment they perform better, automatically that might also result in us getting medals. So it's just for them really to remain focused and then ensure that their performance is up to standard. And that also starts with self-discipline. So yeah, let's wait until that time.
If we have a look from today to when the competition starts, the overall Commonwealth Games, that's 19 days from now.
Yes.
Can I ask Joseph, when is the expectant departure from Namibia and expected arrival on the other side in the British Isles?
Okay, the expected departure from here, it will be the 20th of July. You know, we actually, that has been a bit tricky for us, because we have what they call length of stay policy. So that you are only allowed to be in that country 3 days prior to your competition. Now, you know, the opening ceremony will be on the 23rd, but then that does not mean on the 24th everyone starts. But then we have really tried so that everybody is there on the 21st. So yeah, that is one of the challenges we have. Also, with regards to the coming back, it is the same thing. The length of stay policy only say that after your competition ends, you can only stay for 2 days and then you should leave. So, however, we will be leaving on the 20th. So, yeah, different flights, unfortunately. One group will leave via Joburg, Dubai, and then Glasgow. The other group will leave via Joburg, Qatar, and then Glasgow. So, yeah, I think all will go well. We really just appeal that the Namibians should rally behind the team.
the question that you highlighted now about the travel would have been the question of acclimatization. But you answered it primarily by highlighting the three-day preparation. Yeah. Doesn't give you guys the true preparation.
No. It doesn't. And unfortunately, also as going, because the accommodation, the availability of accommodation, unfortunately, it's only made available is from the 21st.
Yeah.
So now that makes it a bit difficult. But I think it's not something that we should cry about, because everybody is living with the same policy. And if perhaps we had really enough resources, we could have gone earlier, but then accommodation is a bit expensive for us also to be there on our own.
And just the last question, primarily that what the physio presentation now highlighted, the time of day in terms of how we understand when daytime ends and when daytime starts, that side. Obviously, they've been suffering with, that's now the Europeans, with heat.
Yeah.
Is there any particular sort of like challenges, worries that you guys would be looking forward to or potentially expecting in terms of the heat that they are suffering that side in Europe?
No, not really. Because they have indicated that it might be a bit rainy.
Yeah.
So we are not worried about any issue of maybe heat and all that. So yeah, we will see. But the only thing is that we have to prepare our athletes mentally, and that is something that we are busy working on. And part of this workshop, it's actually we are looking into that, so that then mentally they are prepared for any eventuality. You get there, the weather changes and all that. So then we are lucky to that the time difference is not much from us. So that is also one thing that we are really grateful.
100%. Joseph, thank you once again.
It's a pleasure.
Yep.
All right, now let's hear from the team physio of Team Namibia at the Commonwealth Games.
Preparation, but you must understand that might disrupt you. That is a load on your system if you're not in your normal routine. Okay, psychological stress is part of the load system, and then rapid changes in load is more dangerous than high load alone. Okay, so I just put a little bit of an injury risk wheel. So you must understand that injury is oftentimes not an isolated case. Right. Usually not just one little thing, but it's a build-up of many things. These are a couple of examples of things that influence the readiness of our athletes. Okay. So I'm going to touch on them very briefly because we are behind in time. But if you have any questions regarding these things, you can ask me afterwards as well. But the big takeaway is that injury risk is a system and it's not a single mistake. Alright, so we have ways to monitor our load. So we have both intrinsic and extrinsic methods to manage this. This is important for both athletes and coaches. So external loads can be interpreted either by training time, frequency, distance, intensity. It depends on what your sport is. And then internal loads we evaluate by rate of perceived exertion, you know, how difficult was that session, our sleep, our heart rate variability, which we'll probably not do during the Commonwealth now. But for instance, that last little part is a questionnaire, you know, so your total recovery questionnaire stops. Those things that just determine, but how am I feeling? You know, how are all these different factors influencing me as an athlete? My readiness, how many of these things are actually accumulating load for me. Okay. So, simple daily monitoring. A small number of consistent measures leads a complex system that nobody uses. Alright, so all you're going to ask yourself as an athlete is, how hard was that? How am I feeling? How well did I sleep? What is your body saying to you? Do you have, like the Germans say, Muskelkater, do you have a bit of muscle ache or not? What is the stress doing to me? How am I feeling? And is pain changing movement? Is it changing the way I'm feeling? So it's important for us to kind of see if we can see a trend forming. You know, if the stress just starts building more and more and more, you know, and or, you know, the sleep is degrading more and more and more. That trend forming, even if it's not poor, but if we see a trend forming, then we know there's some form of intervention that needs to take place. Yeah. So just with regards to pain management, we need to understand that pain is an output of the brain and not an input. Okay, your body doesn't tell your brain that it is in pain. Your body sends information to your brain interprets that information, and the output then is a perception of pain. Okay, so not all pain is tissue damage, but this is why we are here for you guys. We will try and obviously evaluate and determine what are you feeling and why are you feeling it. Alright, but certain psychological stresses are going to heighten your system to certain things. You know, past injuries, you know, haunt us sometimes in these type of stressful scenarios. Am I going too quickly? Everybody, are we together?
Yes.
Okay, so pain repeating is not pain denial. Alright, so what I said now that your body doesn't tell you, we're not saying that your pain doesn't exist, we just need to monitor it. Why is it? So that goal is to distinguish between warning signals from noise. Right. So I want you to think about it in a traffic light system at the moment. So green is I have expected discomfort. I was just sparring now for 45 minutes. You know, I've got some abdominal pain due to all of this Mike Tyson moves I was trying on the heavy bag, you know, things like that. We have normal and expected discomfort. There's no movement change due to my discomfort, and you know it dissipates. Then we've got the amber column where we have some discomfort or some pain, but it seems to be increasing. I have some compensation I need to do my normal movements, and I feel that I'm not recovering before my next training session. I feel flat-footed, I feel heavy. You know, we need to know these things and we can just do the intervention methods. And obviously the red is sharp and was main swelling and stability and performance observations. So report amber early, do not wait for red if it's possible. Alright, so help us to help you. Okay, give us information. We can tell you, okay, don't worry about this, or let's just do some micro management of your training sessions. We'll talk to the coach, or we have to do so we will much rather do micro management of your training than macro management. Telling you to stop doing what you're doing. Alright. Okay, acute cardiac load concepts. So basically, we need load. Alright. We need load. This is why you're here. You've been loading yourself, your body has been adapting, you're an elite level of your sport. Okay, but we must understand that overloading puts us in a position where we've got fatigue-based injuries, we've got overuse injuries, and we have things like that. So we need to try and manage those, the ratio between load and injury. So here is a little bit of a picture. I assume some of you have seen this before, but just to make it clear for everybody, so we have some form of baseline fitness, and what then happens is we train. And we come to a place now where we've trained, but we're just not improving. Alright, so what happens oftentimes is that we try harder, and we accumulate fatigue. So this fatigue accumulation masks our fitness. Alright, so you get to a point where you're just trying harder and harder, but it's actually not going better with your performance. It's because the fatigue influences our performance or our athlete's readiness. Now, by the Lord's grace, fitness dissipates a lot slower than fatigue. So what you can see is that you have this dissipation of fatigue, and then your fitness has this gradual curve. Alright, so what we want when you compete, we want you somewhere here. Alright, so remember, if we manage your fatigue levels well, you'll hopefully be as ready as possible to compete as well as possible. So don't think you'll lose all your strength because you haven't done this specific type of training in the last 3 days. Or you'll lose all your fitness because you haven't done this in the last 2 days. Alright, so let us manage you so that you are ready to compete in from an optimal space. Everybody understand that?
Don't understand the graph, but I'm
sorry. Okay, alright. So red is good in this side, yeah? And this case. We're oil and oil. Yeah?
Okay. Is there a question?
Yes.
Okay. Maybe it's a typical burn. How do I know that I'm under the
Thanks for the question. Very important to address that actually. Yeah. Okay. So when you are overtrained, you are usually under recovered. So we used to think about it as overuse injuries, but that's changed a couple of years ago now. We think about it as under recovered injuries. So there wasn't sufficient time for you to recover from your previous loads, and this has accumulated in this micro trauma that's accumulated to macro trauma. Okay, so under recovered, you have declining training quality. So try again. You used to sparring six rounds or 3 minutes, and now suddenly after 4 rounds you feel, okay, you know, I'm flat footed, you know, I'm getting slow, my arms are dropping. Then we know you're probably under recovered. Okay. Alright, so it's a different feeling than being gassed, you know, than being just tired because you're unfit. Alright, so we need to think about what has your load been the past 4 weeks or past 6 weeks and compare it to your current load. And if there's a good correlation between the two, you shouldn't be unfit because you've been training well. Alright, does that make sense? Okay, so we have also then, obviously, as I mentioned, we have preparedness that's suppressed. So you are continuing, you're finishing your sparring, your 6 rounds of 3 minutes, but the RPE has risen, so the perceived effort has risen. So you get through it, but you feel, just that was a lot more effort for me to run my 400 meters, or to do my boxing, or to do whatever. So, and you feel then certain things happen as well. So we get motivational drops. So it means that you're just not keen to go to practice today. You're just not keen to put in the effort today. Coach says it's warming up with a 3 kilometer swim, and you know, you're just thinking as yourself as you exhaling in the water, you know, what am I doing here? I would rather want that time in bed. Okay. Alright, and then we've got this exposure mismatch. So this is where, you know, let me give you an example to make it easier. So you are a power lifter, we are going to do 1RMs in competition, you've only done triples, or you know, 5RM type of strength work, so you haven't been exposed to maximum lift. You know, de-racking a weight, stepping in position, that's a skill. Okay, so you've not exposed yourself to that maximum skill, in this case the power lifter, for that maximum squat. So there's this insufficient or this mismatch between what is expected of you at the games and what you've been done in doing this training. So sometimes the answer is not more fitness, it is better recovery, better timing, and a bit exposure. Yes,
Michael. So it's more of all my own understanding and experience to determine like a team or to understand.
Yes.
Or feel that my projects will be able to see it in that simple place. Because if I figure it out, a lot of my projects will be able to see it. And if it doesn't divide it, it will be as good as I feel. I'm not getting tired, but I ask what is to just push it like our
body. Yes, so exactly. So the communication is key between you as an athlete and the coach. So if you have a coach that knows you, who see you box, who knows how you train, you will pick up. The coach's eye is very important. They will pick up that you are flat-footed. They will pick up that you are not doing things as you should. And for those people that are traveling with coaches that don't know you, that haven't seen you perform, so it's important to communicate these things. Say, this coach, I'm used to swimming 50 meters in this amount of time. I can swim 50 meters, and I'm consistent with this time, but now I'm just not getting those times. Alright, then we need to think, are you under recovered? Alright. Okay, so I'm not gonna think this is not as interesting for you guys, but there's a lot of things that happen when we recover. Okay. Okay, so what does the recovery evidence say? So there's no single modality that works for everybody. Alright, this is the most researched things as well. So sleep, nutrition, hydration, and load management remain the highest value foundations. Okay, cold water immersion or ice baths, compression garments are promising but only short-term benefits. Massage and foam rolling often improve perceived recovery and soreness more than objective performance, and stretching alone is limited evidence as a recovery strategy. Okay. What I want to say is that evidence-based doesn't normally directly correlate to what modality you need, because you weren't part of those studies. So what I usually recommend in season is to try these things. For some people, ice baths make them feel heavy. Other people, ice baths refresh them, you know, amazingly. So we need to know actually before, if you know, I would need compression boots. You understand what I'm saying? So research does show us certain things are better than others, but you weren't part of those studies. We need to know what works for you as an individual. So if you know those things, it's better for us. Okay, so the highest value tools, sleep. Okay, sleep is the primary and best way to recover. Physically, psychologically, all of those things. Nutrition, then hydration, load management, cold water compression, massage foam rolling, and stretching alone. Okay, so I can't make you sleep. I can ask Ryan to knock you out. That will make you sleep. Maybe not good quality sleep, but but modalities support recovery, they do not replace recovery. Okay. Okay, so I'm just going to briefly touch on a couple of things. So sleep, it's a primary recovery intervention. If sleep is poor, the rest of the plan is already compromised. Okay. Later on, we're going to say this, but I'm going to say it now as well, is your sleep is a training session. You must use sleep. And you must consider the training session. If your coach sees training starts at 8, and what time does training start? At 8. Okay. So, that was the shot of my life. Okay. So, we want to do about 8 to 10 hours. Okay. So, we need to try and have consistent sleep with the wake time. Remember what I said? The sun is going to set later than we used to now. It's going to come. It's going to rise earlier than we used to now. We need to have these set, awake, and sleep nice. Alright. Use brightness of screens before bed. We already spoke about this. Caffeine timing matters. Remember that caffeine, that the adenosine receptors that it clings to, it affects your ability to fall asleep. Many hours, 4 to 8 hours, depends on the caffeine. Input. So use naps strategically, not randomly. What I want to say here is if your naps influence your sleep at night, leave the naps. Okay. All right. If you are tired, have some slow time. But if you're not gaining that amount of hours at night because your naps are influencing you, rather drop the naps. Okay. Alright, so remember that sleep is an amazing thing. During sleep, your body produces more testosterone, growth hormone, all of these things that people want to use as doping methods. Your body releases those things naturally when you sleep. You know, it decreases your cortisol, it makes you actually, your reaction times quicker. You know, there's so many beautiful things that happen when you sleep. You will be irresponsible if you don't sleep well. Yes, right. Now, sleep is a diary thing, and you want that to help you. Now, some people are more morning, some people are more evening people. Irrespective if you wake up tired, we want to get those hours in. Alright, you'll see that if you have a good consistent plan, this is going to help you with that morning. Alright, so Doc already spoke about nutrition a little bit, so I'm not going to talk too much about it. So some of them are quite time sensitive. So carbohydrates restore your glycogen. So usually what the American College of Sports say and what the International Society of Sport Nutrition recommend is that you take about 1 gram, 1 to 1.2 grams of carbohydrates per kilogram per hour after your training for 4 hours. Okay. Alright, so if you're 60 kilograms, that's about 60 grams of protein every hour for the following 4 hours. Okay. I'm not a nutritionist, this is not my field of expertise, I'm just quoting the diet. Okay. So protein helps us with protein synthesis or to recover. So we're looking at about 0.25 to 0.54 grams per kilogram per hour for the 2 hours after training. Okay, so if you're 80 kilograms, that's 20 grams of protein for the next 2 hours, or 40 grams in total. Does that make sense? Overall, if you're not training hard at all, if you just want to get your macros, usually somewhere between 1.4 and 2.2 grams per kilogram of mass. And then water loss, the doc also spoke about that. You know, if you take your 1.25 to 1.5, 125 to 150%, sorry, that just makes more sense in my mind. So if you lost a kilogram, that's 1.25 liters of water. I also have a picture of the urine. Red minds think alike, huh?
Of course.
So don't start the session dehydrated. Okay. So rather start the session well hydrated. That if you lose water and you need to go for water, there is something there. Okay. Because the stress of performance anxiety and all of those things, you know, it's certain things tighten up. So start hydrated. Okay, so usually ice baths is good for repeated competition. So if you have a heat this morning and a final this afternoon, somewhere like that, that's usually enough to go, but only if you tolerate it well. Okay. So how cold must it be? So most of the research is actually anywhere between 10 and 15 degrees. Okay, so it doesn't need to be very, very cold. And then you can, somewhere between 10 and 15 minutes, alright, in that fall. So a lot of people want it 0 degrees, it's fine if you tolerate it well. It doesn't really show increase in recovery from the very cold water. So if you, I don't know if we'll have access to cold baths at the Olympics we had, but we also needed to book those times. But if you have a bath in your hotel room, think about maybe adding 1 kilogram of ice to 10 liters of water over the media phase. Okay, so when you sit, you know, over here, obviously the boxers will might want to lie down with their shoulders and stuff like that, but most people just do the media phase. Okay, 1 kilogram of ice, 10 liters of water. Yeah. All right, we're all going to sleep. All right, let's just remember what you are recovering from. So, hypertrophy, you're not in an hypertrophy phase. You're not trying to bulk up. You're not trying to be Arnold Schwarzenegger. Maybe on an Instagram post you want to be, but we actually just want to do that. You're not in that down phase of your training. Active recovery, so low intensity. So your coach will tell you what your low intensity is. But remember, don't turn your active recovery into a training session. Okay, just because that beautiful lady of Sweden is there, you know, or whatever. So if it needs to be slow, do it slow. All right. The athlete should feel better afterwards, not successfully tired. All right. If you need to do active recovery, do it for what it is. It's very hard on our... for our pride, to be slow. When we have to swim slow or jog slow or whatever. So it's very hard. But remember why you did. You are a champion, and champions do these now. Okay. So there's a sign in soft tissue now for those kind of things. So travel. Okay, so travel is a load. Remember that. Travel is a load on your body. So plan for it like you're planning for training. So your sleep bank needs to be full. Some of us don't sleep on an airplane at all. Okay? It just doesn't feel good. The stress of traveling. So be hydrated, and some people have an adverse effect to the meals on the airplane. Alright, they make you feel bloated because it's so processed and stuff like that. Rather than grab a couple of snacks, be slightly hungry the whole time. Then when you are feeling bloated and heavy and take 3 or 4 days to just, you know, feel better. Move often. If you have compression socks, something that you need to wear, remember to pack them in. And afterwards, light food. Remember, it's already a load. It was a stress on your body. So don't go your 1 RM or 100% sprinting. Just after that. And immediately when you get to the hotel, plan your sleep. Make sure that when you've got meetings for your groups, your management, make sure that it doesn't affect the athlete's sleep time. And oftentimes, really early, very early training also influences athlete's sleep. So don't arrive in recovery yet. Yeah. If you're flying the 20th or whatever, make sure that you've accumulated that sleep and recovery balance. So read, again, same training as planned. You have normal soreness, your sleep is good, your mood is stable. With Amber, we modify training because training is increasing poor sleep, higher stress, and we have a medical review. We need a